You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, I am feeling a lot better tonight than I was last Saturday when I was flu-stricken, and, well, a lot's changed since last Saturday, hasn't it? Welcome to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I'm your host, James Edwards. It's Saturday evening, January 21st. I am live tonight in Washington, D.C., a very posh and well-appointed hotel room tonight, and I've got so much talent surrounding me in this room. It's just going to knock your socks off. How about Sean Bergen? How about Sam Bushman? How about Kurt Crosby? And the one and only Bill Johnson over on the couch, taking it all in. It has been a historic, there's no shortage of adjectives we could use to describe the week it's been in Washington, D.C. Thankfully, I'm feeling better. We are going to walk you through everything we witnessed, everything we participated in, everything we saw, everything we heard, everything we did over the course of the next 3 hours. Be prepared for a show of excess indulgence as we share with you, as we open up, take you behind the scenes from our experience in D.C., which again, we are broadcasting live from tonight, a day after Donald Trump was officially sworn in as President of the United States of America. As you know, I had the flu, was feeling pretty bad all the way up until last Sunday. The clouds parted on Monday, and I knew I was going to be well enough to come up to D.C., made the trip up on Wednesday, the 18th. Now, you'd have to be a Southerner to do what I did when I arrived in the area on the 18th. I drove 3 hours out of my way to spend the night at the Robert E. Lee Hotel in Lexington, Virginia, because you know what? Do you know what? The 19th was, it was General Lee's birthday. That's right. And you know what today is? It's General Stonewall Jackson's birthday. Lee Jackson, it's a holiday in Virginia. And the 19th is Lee's birthday. The 21st is Jackson's. They're about 3 hours away in Lexington, Virginia. So I was there. I was there to pay my respects to two of the finest Americans that ever lived. And at 6:45 a.m., on Thursday morning, January 19th, I was standing before Stonewall Jackson's tomb at the Stonewall Jackson Memorial Cemetery. I saluted him on behalf of the audience for everything he stood for in life, for his defense of our homes and firesides. That was actually Robert E. Lee's birthday, the 19th. Went and spent a few moments with the Gray Fox, and then I was on my way to D.C. And let me tell you something, folks. I didn't come here for a good time. I mean, we've certainly had a good time, don't get me wrong, but this was not a vacation. I wasn't here to join the revelry. I have been working. This has been a working vacation, you can't really call it a vacation. It's been a business trip. It's been a business trip. There have been so many people here that are in town that are fans of the show, friends of the show, colleagues of mine, that I have just regrettably, and I feel horrible about it, have not been able to visit with. A lot of people were going out for dinners, going out for drinks. I have not been able to partake in any of that because it has just been too busy. So on Thursday, after I left Lexington, back up to Washington and joined Sam Bushman on one of the radio rows that they had set up here for the media, and sat in with Sam for a few minutes on the radio. Sam and his co-host Kurt Crosby have been in town all week, and they have been broadcasting live all week, the Liberty Roundtable show, libertyroundtable.com. Be sure to check that out. I mean, excellent commentary, opinion, and analysis all week from D.C. Of course, you're getting it tonight here on the Liberty News Radio Network from the Political Cesspool this Saturday evening. Difference between a weekly and a daily, I guess you could say. But Thursday night, we actually had the chance to let our hair down a little bit. I went out to dinner with Sam, with Kurt, and with one of our contributors here in the D.C. area. He, too, is an attorney, although a local one. We won't give his name, but he is a generous contributor to our work on the radio. And he took us out to Arlington, Virginia. We had one of the biggest and finest steaks that I've ever seen put on a plate. And we just had a great time. If it's not for people, and he knows who he is, and he knows we're talking about him. If it wasn't for you, my friend, and people like you, we wouldn't be able to be on the air. We wouldn't be able to make trips like this. And that's why I'm here. I'm not here to go out and party. I'm here to work. And I am here to serve as your representative, ladies and gentlemen. We are here as alternative media to take our rightful position in the public discourse. And certainly, I think our work, the people we're able to put on the air, people like Sean Bergen, certainly we're as professional and as well-produced as anything that's out there. The only thing that we don't have that the big boys have is that multi-million-dollar budget or multi-hundred-dollar budget for that matter. But we do the best we can with what we've got. We can't be everywhere at all times like the networks, but there are some things that we think we need to be at. There are some things that we choose to be at as your voice, as your eyes, as your ears. Certainly the Donald Trump rally when it came to Memphis in February that the mainstream press or the establishment press talked about for 7 months, 8 months, 9 months. It was in the news every week. We were there with press credentials. Of course, we went up to the RNC in Cleveland in July with press credentials, and then now the inauguration. Here in January of 2017, and I think it brings an appropriate closure to a closure to the campaign of Donald Trump. Now he's president. Certainly, we will continue to cover his presidency and his administration, and we'll be here every week. But it brings closure to the campaign of Donald Trump, the election of Donald Trump, now the inauguration, and to be here. To be here at the inauguration, to have been at the RNC, to have been at rallies, to have broadcasted live from Trump rallies. That is why I'm in Washington tonight. I am serving as your representative in the press. Alternative media is taking center stage. New media taking center stage. That's what we do here at Liberty News Radio. That's what we do here at the Political Cesspool. And we're going to give them hell tonight. That phrase will become more known to you as the night continues. But that's why we're here. That's why we're doing what we're doing. And that's why we're having the show that we're having. Who other than this network and these programs and these hosts will bring you the news and the events and eyewitness accountings from something like the presidential inauguration, something as historic as this, but us, from our perspective? No one. That's why we do what we do. And your support, and by now everyone who contributed to the show in December should have received their incentive gift packages. They should all have been delivered by now. I personally went on my way out of town to Washington before I got on the interstate. I personally went to the post office to ensure that each of them were sent out via priority mail. We paid the most we could to send those out so they would get to you in a timely manner. I hope you receive those. And the book, of course, the incentive gift for the fourth quarter fundraising drive was the book Downtown White Police by Jim Lancia. So you're going to be enjoying that on the same weekend that Trump was elected president, the same weekend we're here in Washington reporting live tonight. And we hope we have a good time. But it's because of your support that we're able to do what we do every week, including attend events like this. I'm not going to say I'm not a little tired. I am a little tired, but we're staying lit for you. And as this show continues tonight, I'm going to spend just a couple of more minutes with you at the top of the next segment, and then we're going to get into a roundtable discussion that's going to continue through the entirety of the show. Edwards, Bergen, Bushman, and other surprise and special guests coming your way tonight as the Political Cesspool broadcasts live from Washington, D.C., the day after Donald Trump was sworn in as President of the United States, and we were there. We'll talk more about it right after this. Stay tuned.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, I think we're up to Thursday night as I am retelling the tale. And that's something I like to do. That is something I like to do personally. I like to share all of myself with the audience. I like to share aspects of my personality, my family life, my day-to-day routine. Certainly we cover the news, but I don't hold anything back. I want to form an intimate relationship with my audience, as you well know. You're family to me. And so I enjoy these segments where I just get to take you behind the scenes and you go where I go. Thursday night, I'm staying at Jared Taylor's house. Jared Taylor is, of course, a friend of mine and no stranger to regular listeners of this show. Now, Jared, on the other hand, was in California for an appearance on Thursday night. So I want you to take this, follow the timeline here. So it's Thursday night. It's midnight here in D.C. I'm at Jared's house. It's 9 o'clock in California, and he's about to get on the red eye. I call him. And he's at the airport, 9 o'clock on Thursday night. He flies all the way across country. He ends up at his house at about 6:30 Friday morning. And the guy's an animal. He changes clothes, and we go straight to the inauguration. And he goes all day until about midnight the next night. I don't think he didn't sleep on the plane. He told me he went about 48 hours with no sleep. And he's a little bit older than me, and I got 7 hours of sleep, and I was dragging at about 6:30 that morning. But anyway, Jared was my, I guess, chaperone and host, and he got me on the metro, and I will tell you, and he wrote a report about this for his website, American Renaissance. You can check it out. And he talks about the experience that we shared, and it's a really good article, but it was just like Cleveland in a way. You felt very safe and secure. I think there was 28,000 members of law enforcement from different outfits across the country that were in D.C. to keep the peace. We felt very safe, but we never felt encumbered upon. We never felt hassled. It was less strained getting front row where we were sitting. Front row to Donald Trump. We were 40 feet away from Donald Trump. Could have tossed him a baseball with a lot of these. It was very safe, very secure, but no less hassle getting that close with the proper tickets and credentials, of course, than going through your regular airport TSA. And so Jared and I were there, and we came, we saw, we conquered. What can I say? You can read his piece at amren.com. I would encourage you to do that. And I will share with you more as the show goes on from my experience at the inauguration, what we did after the inauguration, all the way up to where we are now. But like I said, talent is wasting in this room right now. When I'm surrounded at the table by Sean Bergen and Sam Bushman, I want to stop talking and let them take over. So what we're going to do the remainder of the show is we are just going to have a back-and-forth conversation about the weekend's festivities. We're going to talk about what Trump has done in his first hours as president, what we can expect in the days to come, and, of course, this grotesque, obscene, degenerate women's march. It's so obscene that we can't even say what they themselves are calling it because it's not fit for AM radio. But Sam, of course, your regular listeners are well-informed as to your experiences in Washington this week because you were recounting that each day on your show, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday on LibertyRoundtable.com. So we won't ask you to retell all of it, but let's go to the inauguration.
To suffice it to say, James, it was an incredibly peaceful event for us as well. The security were professionals. They had a tight security without question, but they were professional and patient and polite. It was a delight to see. They walked an incredible fine balance. I was pleased with them. Now, there were riots and there were problems and there were broken glass and trashed cars and all kind of things. We got into that some, too, and we'll tell you all about that coming up. But for the most part, though, it was a peaceful event, and the mainstream press is peddling how horrible it was or how awful it was. But suffice it to say, we went. We didn't have as good of tickets as James, but our tickets were still very good. We enjoyed the event. Donald Trump, we heard him do the swearing in. There was a lot of swearing going on, like Kurt says. And the point is, when we were there, though, all of a sudden I heard this guy yell, "Give him heck! Donald Trump, give him heck."
Well, we did. I think the person didn't say heck. It was H-E-double hockey sticks. But anyway.
So he yelled this, and I'm thinking, yeah, who the heck was that, man? I want to know this guy. That's my side of the story, James.
It was me.
Come back to find out. I bring this up to James. He tells me that he yells this. I heard James yell this. It was so loud, and I'm telling you right now, if you're reasonably close, had good tickets, you heard James Edwards. Everybody did.
Well, here was the thing about that. So we were setting up with the print media. They had the television media elevated on the wings. We were with the print media in Section 1, right below the presidential podium, about 40, 50 feet away from Donald Trump. The only thing separating us from Donald Trump was the orchestra.
But the dishonest media got the elevated position, just so you know.
Oh, that's right. And we were down there with the print media. Now, every time Donald Trump would say something that we liked or that the crowd liked during his inaugural address, you would hear a roar coming from the mall, which was, of course, behind where we were, where the actual citizens
and
were.
And I was at the head of that crowd in the mall, and it was loud, and everybody was loving the Donald, loving the events that were happening. But for James, it was a different experience so close.
It was. So I'm up there with the print media, and it's like a library. I mean, you could hear a pin drop in those first 20 or 30 rows, and we were positioned on the front row.
These liberals are melting down in
the
tears.
The only time that they cheered, if anyone watched the entire processional, the entire ceremony, you know that all of the ex-presidents were introduced except for George H.W. Bush, who was hospitalized and couldn't make it. But everybody else was there, including President and Mrs. Clinton. And when Hillary Clinton was introduced, all of the media burst out in a roar. It was the only time they cheered the entire 2 hours that the thing was going on. The only time. And I was talking to Bergen about it downstairs. You know, this is supposed to be your media. This is supposed to be your unbiased, of course, we know it's not that way. This is just supposed to be the media that reports the story. And we're not talking about political commentators. We're talking about reporters. Reporters who are supposed to give both sides of the story to present it in an objective way. And Sean, we'll bring you on right now with that. You couldn't help but make a comment about that that certainly stood out to me.
Well, you know, the thing, every now and again, the mask slips, James, and these people actually reveal themselves for who they are. They're just, they're feckless, they're irresponsible, they're hypocritical, they're undisciplined. And when you go to journalism school and you major, they tell you, you don't clap at press conferences for anything. You just don't applaud. That's not your role. You're not there as a participant. You're there as an objective observer. But it just goes to show you how these people just cannot help themselves. And at the same time, they'll go back to their respective hotel rooms. They'll look in the mirror. and they'll see an objective journalist. And I kind of equate them with anorexics who look in the mirror and see a fat girl. Because that's really that's the kind of distorted worldview that we're talking about here. This is how these people view themselves. And I can tell you that to the last man, they are so lacking in self-awareness that they don't even realize what they're doing. And when you see them behaving in this manner, they reveal themselves for who they actually are. And they, look, they're on Clinton's team. The news media in this country is the paramilitary wing of the Democratic National Committee. That's who they are. And they now are, of course, in complete meltdown. They don't know how to handle Trump. They don't surely don't know how to handle his press secretary, Sean Spicer, who held his first press conference today and basically went right at the media and criticized them for the way they mischaracterized the crowds at Trump's inauguration. All their shots were very tight. They wouldn't go with the big wide crowd shots. They never really gave you a sense as to how many people were there, the enthusiasm of the people were there. You know, I mean,
some things never changed from his campaign rallies.
Yeah, exactly.
Same exact MO.
Yeah, exactly.
But the reason I bring that up, Sean, is that so they cheered for Clinton, which we certainly took notice of, Jared and I, and cheered at no other point. I think there was a smattering of cheers for Jimmy Carter, who was introduced, some of the others, but a robust applause for Hillary Clinton. And so I'm sitting there that they didn't cheer for any of Donald Trump's applause lines during the – they were objective at that point, I guess. So it got to the end, and Donald Trump was done, and I just – I had had it with him. I stood up, and I yelled to the top of my lungs what Sam just said, "Give him hell, Donald!" And I got a picture. I posted some pictures to my Twitter feed. I got a picture. You can tell me what he's doing, but I could swear Trump looked down and gave me the thumbs up. We'll talk about it when we come back.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
With news this hour from LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg.
Just as residents of Chicago will face steep tax increases and steep increases in municipal fees this year in order to pay the cost of government employee pensions, Californians, who already are among the most overtaxed residents of the United States, will probably confront breathtaking new demands from the state's revenue collectors this year, and for the same reason. On January 9th, California Governor Jerry Brown announced that the state's general fund budget suffers a $1.6 billion deficit despite increases in tax collection by more than 50% over the past 9 years. To make up for that shortfall, Brown is expected to propose a 42% increase in gasoline taxes and an increase of 141% in vehicle registration fees. This would be a severely regressive tax increase, meaning it would result in disproportionate hardship for low-income California residents. Much of it would be devoted to maintaining the exceptionally lucrative pensions enjoyed by government employees. The governor's proposed 2017-2018 state budget includes a $524 million increase for the California Public Employee Retirement System, which would be an 11% increase over the $5.3 billion spent for that purpose in 2017. California has a personal tax rate of 13.3%. The highest in the nation, and the sixth highest corporate tax rate, which is nearly 9%. Predictably, the tax and regulatory burden have combined to make the state a net exporter in terms of both personal and business migration.
For commentary and insights on a troubled world, visit Joel Skousen's worldaffairsbrief.com. For LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg.
Are you sick and tired of just being sick and tired? Are you sick and tired of being told that you are somehow privileged? Are you sick and tired of being told to shut up, both at work and at school? Are you sick and tired of panhandlers pestering you whenever you go out to shop or to eat? Are you sick and tired of jobs that never come and an economy that never goes anywhere? Are you sick and tired of having to take orders from incompetence? Are you sick and tired of movies and television shows that depict a white man as a bumbling incompetent? Are you sick and tired of a government that welcomes non-white immigrants and exposes you to diseases? If you are sick and tired of being sick and tired, then the American Freedom Party is for you. Connect with us theamericanfreedomparty.us. Once again, theamericanfreedomparty.us.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, so we are at the inauguration. A roaring crowd everywhere except for where the press is. The only time they roared was when Hillary got introduced. And at the end of it, I just said, you know what? A once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be front row for a presidential nomination, any presidential nomination, or inauguration. And I said, I actually like this guy. I actually voted for this guy. I said, you know what? I'm not going to let this opportunity go. Maybe he hears me, maybe he doesn't. Sam Bushman heard me. I gave the full-throated endorsement, and then, you know, it certainly looks like I got an acknowledgement, but who's to say for sure? But all I know is this. I was happy to do it. He needs to know that the people support him, and that this audience supports him, and that we support him. And that doesn't mean that he agrees with us on everything, that we agree with him on everything. Of course, everyone remembers everything that happened during the campaign, and we're not going to rehash all that tonight. But the bottom line is this. We're in Washington, D.C. We attended the inauguration. We scored great tickets. Those tickets did not come from the Trump campaign. I know everybody in the press is listening tonight, as they always do, and they're going to skewer Trump for giving me those tickets. We did not get the tickets from the Trump administration, the Trump transition team. People are wondering, and I've gotten a lot of emails to this effect, how did you get those tickets in the front row? Well, I'll tell you the truth. I'm going to come clean. It was December. I was at the mall with my children. They were in Santa Claus's lap. I got a 6-year-old girl, a 2-year-old little boy, and they're in Santa Claus's lap and going, giving out their Christmas list. And after it was over, I pulled Santa Claus aside. This is the truth. And I said, you know what? We go way back, and you've always been good to me. And I know it's inappropriate, and maybe you can help me, maybe you can't. But you know, I took a lot of heat for Trump this year. If there's any way, just for old time's sake, you could give me 2 front row tickets to his inauguration, I'd really appreciate it. And he told me. And Santa told me. He said, you know what? Honestly, that is inappropriate. You know I don't do adults. But just check your stocking Christmas morning, and we'll see what happens. That's it. So that the rest is history. Sean, you were in New York for the inauguration, or during the inauguration. What were some of the takeaways you – I told you as we were downstairs – that I haven't been able to see the forest for the trees this week. I've been too close to the action to actually know what's actually going on, other than, of course, what I witnessed at the inauguration itself. I don't really know the news for the day or two before the inauguration or what's happened since. From your perch in New York, what were you able to observe from this week's festivities, and what were your takeaways from the inauguration, his address, the hours before and after? Take that anywhere you want to go.
Well, you know, it began on Inauguration Eve. I was up in New York Thursday night actually doing my show and talking to some people who were on the ground. I had a friend who was at the Deplora Ball, and he talked a little bit about trying to get through the ankle biters and the protesters, rioters who were outside that event. That event, as you may recall, was targeted by these J20 anarchists earlier in the week. Uncovered by the great investigative journalist James O'Keefe and his Project Veritas, and that ran Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday night. I had another friend who was marching in one of the bands, the inaugural bands, and they were out the night before in a bar restaurant, and they were on lockdown as these hoodlums. They're called protesters, affectionately in the media. I call them rioters. Were clashing with police right outside the door of the restaurant. They were locked in. They couldn't get out. So he came to me live on the phone. And initially, a lot of the reports, the initial reporting coming out about the mayhem happening out, this malevolence, this dark cloud that was bussed in from all over the place, obviously clearly funded by George Soros types, was that a lot of these reports were only getting out with by way of citizen journalists with cell phones and social media, Periscope, this kind of stuff, because none of the other news outlets were really breaking away from their regularly scheduled programming. So that was Thursday night, and I did have an opportunity, of course, to speak with Sam Bushman that night, kind of previewing the inauguration. Then I got the next big thing was the address itself, which was unequivocal and very straightforward in saying we're going to put America first. And, of course, you know, that sent shivers through the mainstream media who, you know, characterized the speech as being dark.
One major outlet, I mean, they're all the same, so you can't differentiate. I don't know if it was the New York Times, Washington Post, but it was a major outlet said it was the darkest presidential inaugural address in the history of the Republic.
Because he wants to put his country first. I mean, how...
That's where we're at, Sean.
How asinine and how completely upside down and backwards these people. I mean, it's a house of mirrors with these folks. It's all smoke and mirrors. It's all a big farce. So I was very emboldened or proud to hear what President Trump had to say. It also, I think, put a lot of foreign governments on notice that we're not just going to be sending you money so that you can maintain an anti-American policy. We're no longer going to pay to protect and defend your borders while we refuse to protect and defend our borders. We're no longer going to be pumping money into your militaries to protect your countries. We're going to be building up our own military right here in our own country. And that's what the left wing considers dark. And that's because they detest their own country. And I think they've been very clear. They've been very forthright on that. I don't think there's really any mistaking that. I think that's what we saw with 8 years of Barack Obama, which is why the country has responded in such a dramatic way with this populist, nationalist, put America first for once. I mean, when was the last time we saw that?
Andrew Jackson?
Yeah, perhaps.
James K. Polk? You'd have to go back a minute.
Reagan, at the very least.
Well, Reagan to a certainly lesser extent. But I will tell you, look, Trump is a lot more stout than Reagan. Not quite as stout as I think O'Reilly compared him to Andrew Jackson. Don't get me wrong, Trump's cool, but he's not that cool.
Yeah.
But this is the kind of people that he's between. He's between a Reagan, a Polk, and an Andrew Jackson as far as American presidents go. And that's not of course, the company's quite bad. I mean, usually as far as our presidents, but that he could do a lot worse than have those names dropped around his. So, obviously, talking about being there, the actual substance of the speech, we know how the media is taking it. I thought, I'll be honest, I expected a lot of fluff. I expected not too much. I just figured it would be a bland acceptance speech with not a lot of policy, not a lot of issues being discussed. And I was pleasantly surprised. I thought it wasn't a campaign stem winder. It wasn't what we're going to see from him as president. But as far as an inaugural address goes, I think it was pretty militant in the best possible sense. He hit a few hard issues.
Stephen K. Bannon has his fingerprints all over that.
And Stephen Miller. Yeah, Miller too, speechwriter.
And these guys are they strike terror into the hearts of leftists across the country because they're bare-knuckle brawlers, and they are out to win. And Bannon is brilliant. And Bannon, like Trump, wins every time he goes out there. Just about every time in the box, Bannon is out there knocking people on their ass. He's an intellectual giant. He's a force to be reckoned with. And when you look at the intellectual capital that Trump has in his advisors, in his closest confidants, from Jared Kushner to Stephen K. Bannon, Kellyanne Conway, Reince Priebus, who knows the ins and outs. I mean, you know, you talk about draining the swamp, but Priebus knows where the frogs and the alligators are in that swamp. And sometimes you gotta deal with those frogs and alligators if you want to get anywhere while you're draining that swamp.
Sean is spot on, and the most important thing is Donald stuck to his campaign issues and promises. Talking about America first, it set the whole world on fire.
All I was going to say is certainly I'm not as high on Reince Priebus and some of the other people that he left in there. But I'll tell you one thing about a strong man like Trump. He can make some of these people fall in line.
Yes.
And if, you know, I would have liked to have seen a lot of these people cleaned out, and that includes Paul Ryan and some of the others. I would have liked to have seen that quite intensely.
Well, we may still see that.
We may still see that. But one thing about these people that just go with the flow and go with whatever's fashionable and in vogue, I've always said, the ideas that this show brings to life are ideas that fundamentally resonate with the American people. And the only reason that there hasn't just been a mass unmasking of the people behind us is there's still a price to be paid for taking a strong stand, a righteous stand on some of these issues. But when they become powerful again, when they become in vogue, when you have a man like Trump that takes these ideas to the next level, then everybody comes a true believer. And even though I don't think much of people like Reince Priebus, if he falls in line and becomes loyal to the master, then you're right. His inside knowledge of the way things work, he has knowledge of the system that Trump doesn't have and that Trump will need if he can make Reince a loyal I don't want to say follower or servant, but you know what I'm saying. Then these people can't have a role. We'll see. Sam was saying he could also jettison them, and that may be what needs to happen. And I think Trump will make that right decision, whatever the case may be. I am high on him right now. I have had a second win behind Trump, and very enthusiastic and hopeful as we head into the first hours of his administration. We'll be right back.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
This is Joyce Riley from the Power Hour, and I want to introduce you to Numana Storable Foods. This is the first brand of storable foods that I am willing to put my name behind. It's food you can trust. No GMOs, no MSG, no chemical preservatives, and no fake meat. Plus, Numana doesn't just make that claim. They back it up with independent evaluation and testing. Another thing that Numana really does that excites me is the delicious vegetarian options. If your standards are as high as mine, I can confidently tell you that Numana Storable Foods are the quality choice that you've been waiting for. Numana won't just meet your expectations, they will exceed them. And that's why we're thrilled to have the good guys from Numana joining the Power Hour family. Go to powerprepper.com and learn about Numana Storable Foods. You can also call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Numana, the storable food you'll love to eat.
We fought, we learned, we struggled,
we won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
I'll take you further behind the scenes, ladies and gentlemen, to the way this thing works here sometimes, but I'm on the road tonight, so we're doing a remote broadcast from a hotel in Washington, D.C., and we've been here for the inauguration, as you well know, And so I tried to get ahead of the game a little bit. And of course, after every live broadcast of the Political Cesspool, shortly after we go off the air live, within an hour, sometimes not even that long, our broadcast archives are up. Well, I normally send those in to Sam after the show, and I, of course, give a short recap of what we talked about during the broadcast and during the program, and Sam puts it up so people can navigate to which hour they want to listen to if they don't listen to the whole show, which, of course, you should. But tonight, I sent those broadcast archive notes in before the show, and I got to see here what I said we talked about each hour so I don't get out of sequence. So we're going to talk about this Women's March in Washington, but I told our producer that we talked about that in the second hour tonight, so I guess we'll have to wait and talk about that at the end of the next segment. First hour, host James Edwards takes the audience behind the scenes and shares with everyone his unique experience while in attendance at the inauguration of Donald Trump. Well, I think we've done that. Special guest Sam Bushman, Sean Bergen. Hey, why don't you and Sean just jam here for the next segment.
One of the things we need to do really is talk about some of the commitments Donald doubled down on in his inaugural address and the night before, right after Toby Keith rocked the stadium.
Okay, let's do this. Give Sean that mic. Here's what we're going to do. We actually have a little bit of free time before we got to get to some stuff that I said we talked about in the second hour, if you follow me here, ladies and gentlemen. Sam, you know what I'm going to do right now? I'm going to step down and get a drink. Of course, water is what I'm talking about. But I'm going to step down. I'm going to let you and Sean jam for if I've got y'all both here live, I want y'all to jam for a segment. Just you and Sean work it out, and I'll be back with y'all in the audience in just a minute.
So, Sean, I submit to you that he doubled down and tripled down on some key points that he made during his campaign and as he was president-elect. When he took the office, he didn't waste any time. He doubled down on some significant key points, right?
Well, you know, how refreshing it is to see a political leader actually do what he said he was going to do. And when you talk about doubling down, I mean, what we're talking about essentially is this guy said, I'm going to do this, and then he comes out and he does exactly that. That's why his campaign gathered momentum and moved like a tsunami through the American political world, because he kept, you know, he would get called out on stuff and he'd come back and double down on it anyway. He was provocative. He was in your face. He was kind of coarse and sometimes vulgar, but he never, ever backed down. And that's what the American people love to see. They love to see a guy who's going to stand up and say, I'm going to do this, and then fight when he starts getting flack from return. He doesn't back down.
He humbly, wisely pointed directly to the people that got him there.
Yeah.
And literally focused on that it was we, that it was us, that it was all of his supporters. I'm telling you, it was a brilliant move to point right back at the people. Many a man would not have done that. I got to give Donald credit.
Absolutely. You're 100% spot on. And that's, I think, what we're seeing unfold right before our very eyes is a man who started out as a kind of a political side joke. He was scorned. He was ridiculed. He was dismissed. And we have seen this guy slowly, by degrees, morph into a very, very serious political leader. And he really turned the tide for me when he appointed Pence as vice president.
Now, he's got the ability to take complex issues and use one-liners and simple phrases, etc., to put it on the kitchen table for everybody to understand. I'm going to give you an example. We're going to get our jobs back. We're going to make America first. We're going to literally have two rules. Rule number one, we're going to buy American. Rule number two, we're going to hire American. Do you realize how many complex economic issues that he boiled down into a few sentences that everybody gets? Do you realize what he's just done?
Well, that's also, I think, is a place to his masterful use of Twitter, how this guy can speak directly to the American public in 140 characters or less. He breaks it down, he simplifies it, and he puts it in a
way. Talk closer to your mic, Sean.
What's that?
Talk closer to your mic. Go ahead,
Talk
sir.
Closer to my mic. I've got that mic just about as close as I think as I can make it.
We'll turn you up a bit. Go ahead.
Yeah, maybe you ought to turn it up. Or maybe I could put the Shakespeare voice on back like my old acting days, right? I'll project to the back rows. How's that? Are we coming through okay there, Mr. Producer? Sounds good. Well, thank heavens for that. Yeah, this is a guy who speaks directly to the American people. He's been criticized for his use of Twitter. When is he going to cut it out? When is he going to knock it off? What does he do? He doubles down. I'm going to continue to use Twitter. Why? Because we have a dishonest media in this country. He was, I think yesterday, speaking before the CIA, and he harped again on our dishonest media. That's what this is, a guy, the first president we've seen, the first Republican that I've seen actually in a long time, who was ready to punch back at the news media. This is a guy. Look, I come from New York. I've known Donald Trump has been on my radar screen for close to 40 years. This is a guy who made his bones in the New York City construction industry. You're talking about some of the toughest guys on planet Earth. And this guy knows that if you're going to be involved in that industry, you can't be a punching bag. If somebody hits you, you got to hit him back twice as hard. Trump is a college-educated street guy. And street guys know that the minute you're taken advantage of, the minute you're shoved around, the minute you're even seen to be slapped around, you diminish in size, you lose credibility, and you lose respect. That's why he continues to have credibility and respect with the American people. This guy was a blue-collar phenomenon. He's a working man's hero. These are guys who need, in very simple terms, I'm going to put you guys back to work. You're going to be making a living wage. We're going to resurrect our industrial jobs, our manufacturing jobs. Coal mining now is not going to be a dirty word. Every single issue down the line.
And his sons are no less. His sons are incredible, articulate, educated street people too. And I don't mean street people like homeless. I mean street people like they know how to rumble. They know how to get it done. Even his sons have done a phenomenal job defending themselves and defending their father against the critics. They've stuck together like you cannot imagine. It's been really a refreshing sight to see.
His family really stood out at the Republican National Convention. That's where we got a really good sense as to what this man Donald Trump was all about. Because for all the criticism that he drew and he took, a lot of people, his supporters, would point at his family, point at his kids and say, how does that guy raise such incredible children? Ivanka Trump is a superstar. These are kids who are, look, there's a lot of kids in that position who would take the old man's winnings and fritter it away, all right? I worked for a couple of guys like that over at Cablevision. Charles Dolan was this grand visionary who started HBO and started 24-hour hyper-local cable news. Well, his son Jimmy is like, he's a clown, and the guy I worked for, too, is like, some gray-haired hippie who's got one foot stuck in the summer of love and feels guilty about the mountain of unearned wealth that he's standing on. Trump's kids aren't like that. They're out there achieving. He's had them on construction sites since they were teenagers. They know the value of a dollar. They know the value of hard work. And they know the value of charity also, which I think is very important, because you can't rise to that level of success without giving something back. I just think the Lord frowns on it.
And I'll tell you what, Ivanka's not a whit behind them.
Oh, no.
They mocked her and kind of made it, hey, Donald's in love with his daughter in weird ways. She's going to be the first lady. She came out today very boldly and just said, you know what? This is absolutely inappropriate suggestions. I reject it. So she's a class act. Not only is she truly a feminine female, not a feminist, but a feminine, proper female, but she's got scrap too, sir.
Oh, she does indeed. And the best part about it is she looks like she smells really nice. The comments, the criticisms that you were talking about leveled at Ivanka Trump just goes to show you the level and the depth of desperation on the American left now. They are really, there's the bottom of the barrel, but these guys are scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Now, did you see the tweet about Barron Trump, the little boy?
Was this from Rosie O'Donnell?
I can't remember who did the tweet. It was one of the liberal. It was a writer for some rag I've never even seen. Basically mocking him, saying he'd end up being like a shooter in school and everything. They've just fallen to the deepest lows. And now the whole world's after them for comments, bringing the children into it. It's one thing to bring Ivanka or Eric or Donald Jr. into it because they're adults and they're involved in politics, right? But now they've brought the son into it. Highly inappropriate and fly. It was retracted, but now they're being mocked all over the world.
Well, Rosie O'Donnell started that. She started with a tweet on Barron Trump not long ago. I think it was right after election night.
Yeah, this latest one is somebody else, but I'm just telling you, it's that same low theme that they've melted down to.
Yeah, there are a bunch of frauds. I worked in the comedy business. Rosie O'Donnell is a big fat pile of crazy, and anybody who's ever been in contact with this woman. anybody who's ever been in contact with her will tell you that that she's easily one of the meanest, most vicious, nest. I knew several of her comedy writers who literally fled the building and said, I cannot work with or around this woman. She's that crazy, that mean-spirited, that vicious. I mean, there was a time where she was known in, you know, her PR image was the Queen of Nice. And this is just how Orwellian these people are. They'll tell you all day long how they're open-minded and flexible in their thinking and tolerant of the views of others. And, you know, tonight we were sitting, you and I and James sharing a couple of plates of chicken wings and having a couple of drinks before the show. Coca-Cola for me, water for James. But these women started strolling in from this abortion parade. And there was one of them sitting behind us with her, semi-masculine male companion. And I could see her listening. She was listening to our conversation.
And she was about to go berserk.
She was about to slit her wrists. I mean, she was just shaking her head. And then the gesture and the I can't take it and the oh, my God. And her, you know.
But she didn't want to come talk to us, though. She didn't want to engage.
Oh, no. Could not engage. No, they don't engage.
All right. Hold on, Sean. 1 hour down. Couple hours coming up. Sam, James, Sean Bergen in studio live from Washington, D.C.
Another hour of the political cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.